Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello and welcome, rugby listeners. My name is Tom Deason, co-host of the Rugby World Cup Daily podcast. A pleasure and an honour, as always, to be with my colleague, Georgina Robinson.
A pleasure and an honour.
Yeah,
it's
always.
It's quarter-final week. You're upping your game, Tommy.
It is. We're not sick of each other yet, but can you paint a picture for our beloved listeners as to where we are right now? It's probably the weirdest place we've been.
There are men's tracksuits to my left, children's tracksuits to my right, and shoes in front of me. We are in a department store because it's bucketing rain outside. The Starbucks is playing 80s rock. And the best we could do is some instrumental backing music in this department store. We hope we're coming to you loud and clear.
It is Thursday evening. It's been a very long day.
And exciting day, Tommy. Yeah, these are the days. It's a really good
team naming day. Wallabies v England, quarterfinal Saturday in Oita. Get pumped. I think I'm pumped now. Now the teams are out, we've heard from both coaches. But what happened this morning? There was a bit of, obviously the team got out a little bit earlier than the Wallabies would have liked before their 4:15 announcement. It was sort of doing the rounds.
Yep. We all sort of knew, which means you guys all knew by early morning on Thursday. And the big shock, of course, is Jordan Pitaia after two tests, a total of 97 minutes.
On the wing.
Left and right wings, has been named at outside centre to take on England. As Samu Karevi said late today, that could never really flourish at the Reds because we didn't get to play enough footy together. So anyway, we're expecting it to flourish against England in a World Cup quarterfinal. Here in Oita, but I've got to say, personally, because remember like last week after the Georgia game, I said, I hope he picks Pitaia and I hope he starts him. I didn't see him doing it at 13 at all.
I don't think anyone did. You know, probably the third choice option there behind O'Connor. Definitely O'Connor, Kurundrani.
No, he's not the third choice behind Kurundrani.
But in the pecking order of what we thought probably today when they were going to pick it, you would say. I don't think he is necessarily. Third in line. But
Kurundrani's a totally different profile. Anyway, but I just love the spirit of it. And that's what I meant last week when I was saying, like, in the fair dinkum department, this could be Michael Checker's last test as Wallabies coach. If they lose, he's already said it, he'll be out the door. So I would hate for Michael Checker. As critical as we've all been of his record, I would hate if in his last throw of the dice, meaning the World Cup, if he somehow went into his shell as a coach. And I like that he has gone all out and backed this kid to rise to the occasion, as he said. Big gamble, it may not come off, but I love the spirit of it. And he can stop talking about playing the Australian way, but this is, I reckon, the Australian spirit in that kind of selection. What do you reckon?
Well, Australia is such underdogs for this game, given their history, everything that's been written. We know, you know, man for man, that, yeah, they're going to be underdogs as well. Is anyone... If the Wallabies were absolute favourites in the Pitaia experiment, if you want to call that whatever you do, gamble, doesn't pay off, well, people will be very upset. But, I mean, the Wallabies aren't going in as favourites. So, as he's sort of spoken about today, the fear factor, it's dead for us. Like, they're not going, they won't be, you could argue that they're not going to go into this game worried at all. They aren't, not, I mean, there is obviously a chance they can definitely win, but a lot of people aren't expecting them to. England are favourites. You know, some of the English journos have sort of said to us that they're quietly confident amongst the playing group, England playing group, they're going to do this, you know, easily. 6-0. So whether that comes to bite them back or not, I don't know. But personally, I think that, I don't mind it. I think that it is, you know, talking to a number of people today, Sterling Moorlach, we wrote a piece and touched on that, that he's said, yeah, it is a bit of a gamble, but this is a guy who has so much talent and has been talked about so much. And then Sterling made the good point that he's so raw that he might not be, he might be one of the few guys in that side who isn't overawed. Like, you
might
know,
not be saddled with the weight of expectation.
Mm.
I don't even think it was about being overawed. I think his comment was, you know, he's not saddled by a fear of failure.
Yeah.
He's just going to go out there and play. And I liked what Sterling said about, you know, and there were two big caveats. It was his communication. So if he can communicate well, from 13, and then if he can defend well, I mean, they're the two things he has to do to kind of nail that position. And what I also like is that the guys around him, guys like Christian, guys like Samu, and guys like Kirtley Beale, they're going to have to and Willie Genia, they're going to have to take the reins, step up in that communication thing, and keep talking to Jordan as well. And I think they'll really look after him there.
My concern though is if Jordan has a stinker and doesn't play well, Australia do lose, that I don't think he will be crucified, but the early, you know, like it would be very easy to draw a bow there if, you know, England's midfield do run over the top of him. 13 is obviously a very hard place to defend, and he isn't as sharp as he needs to be, having not played a lot of football there. This is, you know, when you think about a four-year plan to have a guy who's never played at 13 at test level, position we talked about so much, is pretty remarkable, you know, 2 days out from the test. I just hope that if he does have a stinker, that it doesn't affect him. And it won't. He's only young. He's
if
a kid.
If he has a stinker, that will only reflect on Michael Checker.
And the two other selectors.
But this feels like a Michael Checker captain's pick to me. I'm not saying that the other selectors, Mick O'Connor and Scott Johnson, I'm not saying they didn't agree to it. I don't know, but I imagine. But I'm just saying, I think this is a classically Michael Checker call. And I would also say to that argument, how long's Check had him in this squad for? I mean, he took him on the spring tour, was supposed to give him a run then. Like any other player who was maybe a 50-50, or even, you know, like I'd like to give him. I mean, I don't think he was here for just two starts against Uruguay and Georgia.
Mm.
That because he wouldn't have, with all of those injuries, picking up one in Namibia, he just would have been sent home if he was like the Tevita Kurandrani of the World Cup squad, in my opinion. I think Michael Checker is this convinced about Jordan Petaia's skills and potential, and this convinced about his capacity to lift in this bigger game, that I just think that, I think you can take a little bit of comfort in that.
The more I think about it, it probably does have Michael Checker's fingerprints over it a lot more, this team. Kirtley Beale at fullback, I think personally Dane Hallett-Petty deserved to be there. There's no reason why Kirtley couldn't have come off the bench as he has done. He has gone back for Will Genia at halfback, who even Will admitted today he was a little surprised that he sort of got the nod. Yes and no was his response. A back row of Pocock and Hooper as well, which Michael Checker has never not picked basically throughout 2016 to 2018 when they're both playing. He's never benched one of them when they're both available. That's not a obviously a warm-up game towards the World Cup, but the forwards are settled. Hodge does come back. That probably screams more Checker too as well. Like, he's a Czech favourite. And We're 48 hours out from, it's going to be a huge game. England, on the other hand, George Ford, obviously that was the major talking point this morning. You were at Eddie Jones' press conference. What happened there?
Oh, the English journos are in a lather. Still, like, a good 8 hours on.
God bless us.
They're in bits. To use a red top phrase, it's chaos.
We haven't heard that one for about 4 days since the typhoon.
They're just, sorry, we'll fill you in. Like, the travelling English rugby media pack is the biggest going around in world rugby. There's like thousands of them. There's probably 30 or 40. The Times have about four writers. The Daily Mail has about four writers. The Telegraph has a few. Today, the Daily Mail's chief sports writer, Martin Samuel, graced us with his presence. You know, when Martin Samuel takes the middle chair in the front row of the writer's briefing with Eddie Jones, you know, you kind of know that the big dogs are in town, right? And Paul Hayward's here for the Telegraph. I mean, these are some of the best writers going around.
You're a big deal though as well, Gina. Don't sell yourself short. You're asking Eddie some tough questions today.
Mate, I got the best out of Eddie today.
Yeah, he got a little teary after one of your, or a little emotional. One of your questions about one Jeffrey Sale.
Yeah, he was, Eddie's very interesting. I honestly think that the death of Jeff Sale has affected him quite deeply and has put him in quite a reflective mood. This is the coach. I'll take you back to 2018 in the Six Nations when Wales were playing England at Twickenham, and Warren Gatland named Rhys Patchell, a very experienced, very red-headed young 5'8". Named him at 10. Eddie came to that press conference, the team naming on the Thursday, and just went straight for him. Surprised to see Rhys Patchell there, very green. Said something about, I'm going to paraphrase him, but basically said, Alan Wynne-Jones and a couple of the older guys I expect will go down to breakfast on game day and, you know, really get around him because he won't want to bottle this. He won't want to screw it up.
And what did he do?
He went to pieces at Twickenham. And Wales lost to England. So in that context, like Michael Checker laid it on a platter for Eddie today. Absolutely on a platter. He has named a 19-year-old, even less experienced than Rhys Patchell. So did everyone catch that?
We would like to bring your attention to the leaflets. We don't need the leaflets. We need to...
We need to crack on. You know, he could have gone for the jugular on Jordan Pataia. But what he said was, he's a handy player, but it's a big game for the boy. So, you know, there was a little bit of a... Certainly highlighted it, but then said, you know, and you can either rise to the occasion or be overwhelmed by it. But if Michael Checker's picked him there for this game, I'd anticipate that they expect him to rise to the occasion. Was by no means a classic Eddie sledge. So it was just really different. And so we asked him more about that kind of stuff in the writer's briefing, and he was just generous and made some great comments about his captain Owen Farrell as well. I'll be writing about that in Saturday's Sydney Morning Herald. But going back to the English writers, they're just hilarious, and they were all gobsmacked by Ford's relegation to the bench, Farrell's movement inside to 10, and Henry Slade's elevation to the starting lineup at 13 with Tuilagi at 12.
I was just chatting to them over a coffee at Starbucks. I don't think you're around, but I asked them, "Are you guys buying Eddie's, you know, comments today that?" You know, it is a 23-man squad. It has literally no bearing whether they're starting or finishing, and they're just saying it's absolute gibber. And what do you think about that?
Well, I get that. And I get that you... Maybe I'm taking a sip of the Kool-Aid, but Matt Tamua this afternoon actually said on that kind of... Well, he was asked to comment on the selections. And apart from absolutely... burning his former teammates at the Tigers.
I might just quickly read it out. It's an absolute cracker. Matt Tamua. Manu is a terrible snooker player. George Ford never pays for a beer. Ben Youngs isn't even the best rugby player in his family. The chicken, Johnny May, is very weird. And Dan Cole doesn't have a personality. Mic drop. Press conference. Piercing themselves laughing. Well played, M. Tamua. 1-0.
And then he went on and said... Actually, the other one I liked also was, looks like they've both gone with, they've both benched their Leicester Tigers 10s, which is quite cool. Because Ford obviously played 10 for Leicester. But
Timber at 12.
Yeah, but he did go on to say, he talked about this concept of the finishers, and he drew attention to, I think, 2016, when Ford came on and really changed the game. So he for England, and he was saying that he really thinks that that England want to step up the pace in the last 30 minutes of the game. And that makes a lot of sense to me, because Australia have shown they have a strong bench and they're really strong finishers. While I'm not wholly buying that, you know, this is the death of the starting 15, I do think there is something very strategic about Eddie's selections, apart from the defensive aspect to it, because Farrell's, you know, it's a good defensive lineup. I really do think that it's a bit like Nick White coming on and Matt Tamua coming on at the end. They've both had incredible impacts, and I think that's legitimate, because Australia are, for once in the last 4 years, are actually showing they're finishing really strongly, and I think Eddie's kind of that's the thing Eddie's going for. And one of the things Eddie said in this explanation was that he wishes it wasn't a squad of 15, it was a squad of 23, but you know, rugby rules are that you have to name 15, but I like that bigger picture, that it is nowadays in the modern game when collisions are bigger. Mm. There are such swings and changes in momentum that it does take the squad of 23, and you can't have weak players on your bench, and often you see that it's a different player on the bench, not the exact same player, of poorer quality. Do you know what I mean? It's not like Matt Tamua is a B-grade Christian Lilifano, or Nick White's a B-grade Will Genia. They're really different tens and nines. And I'm buying that part of it anyway. I do think this is where some maybe we'll come to view that kind of thing a bit differently going forward.
James O'Connor only been used off the bench, I think, once in that Argentina test from memory. So who knows? You know, he's been starting recently. Could be the time for the super sub O'Connor to not play in a 13 position. He could pop up anywhere.
Could pop up anywhere. Yeah.
Happy to make. Do you want to make a tip yet, or wait till tomorrow? Let it settle maybe a day. Have a think about it. Partners are dying to know. I'm sort of still up in the air a little bit, but I think England will win, but not sure by how much at this stage.
I think Australia will win.
Oh, really?
Wow. I've never been optimistic. I just really like the spirit of this selection. Yeah. We're not going to die wondering anyway. And I really like that. I think it would have been really... It's been a lot of weird talk in the Australian media contingent, a lot of accusations of un-Australian behaviour, unpatriotic behaviour, a lot of that kind of bullshit. And
yep.
And I think the only thing that would be un-Australian is if Michael Checker went for a conservative, fear-based lineup, and he hasn't. And I really like that.
As journos, it'd be a great yarn. They could get it done. Can you imagine the smile on Michael Checker's face and Eddie's furrowed brow if 4 years of planning goes down the gurgler and England don't get to a semi-final, which they haven't done since 2007?
It's a brutal game, hey? It's like really high stakes for both teams, for both coaches.
Well, players have talked about a quarter-final being, you know, previous players about that being more nervous for that than a final. A final, yeah, you get there and you want to win that, but if you flunk it in the quarters, particularly in something like the sevens as well, I know it's very different, but the sevens guys also talk about a quarter being, you flunk that, gone. So we will see.
We will see.
What are we doing for dinner and lagers tonight, Jay?
I feel like I haven't had a bowl of ramen in about 2 weeks, and I'd like to...
I've had enough ramen for 14 years of my life, so I'm happy to just tap that up.
Then how about we go have some tofu and soda water?
Maybe. Play some Scrabble later and behave. Thanks, G. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Tommy. Yeah, we'll a back. Pleasure and an honour.
Always.
Just to repay the
always
compliment.
Always is, G.
Thanks for tuning in, types. Tell us what you think about Jordan Petaia's selection. And we will come to you tomorrow from Oyster Stadium after we've heard from both the skippers. That's it for now.
Too easy. Catch you later. Sayonara.
Sayonara.